I would like to conclude our introductory section with a very useful instrument that the United States Conference for Catholic Bishops has put together as a way of inviting us to reflect on many of the broad issues of Catholic social teaching, and which will help us to look at the question how bioethical issues figure in that broader context. If you've already taken this quiz, then please proceed, and we'll look at it together on this webpage. If you haven't, what I would invite you to do is to turn this recording off in just a moment and either print out the document form of this quiz and cover up the answers on the right-hand side and see how well you do just working down the quiz, or you can do much the same thing on the internet by perhaps not looking at the right-hand column in this material, which I've put together on this webpage that includes both the questions and the answers. But I'd like you to have, just for your own benefit, have gone through and looked at it yourself before we look at it together. Again, if you've already done that, then please proceed. Otherwise, please stop the recording at this point and restart it once you've looked at the quiz together. What I would like to do is look at the questions that specifically pertain to bioethics in some detail, noting the others as well, and also getting a sense of how they interdigitate with the bioethical issues and how they give us a broad sense of Catholic social teaching. Notice that the very first question focuses on the horror of abortion, asking how many unborn children have lost their lives to abortion since 1973, since abortion was legalized in the Supreme Court decision of Roe v. Wade. And the answer that they've been able to come up with is 53 million, which is a staggering number of lost lives. And their intention is to jolt people's conscience into an awareness of this very great and terrible social evil. Number two, and actually number three as well, have to do with the mythology of embryonic stem cells. And we'll be looking at this in some detail during our course. The mythology being, and this was particularly true in California, where a voters' measure was passed that provided millions of dollars for embryonic stem cell research, and over the years it's turned out that this particular form of research, that is, using human embryos as sources of stem cells, of cells that can be induced to become other kinds of cells, the idea being that these tissues could then be used to help cure diseases, the promises that diseases such as Parkinson's disease or severe forms of diabetes or even spinal cord injury would be miraculously healed through the use of stem cells turns out to have been absolutely and utterly false. As we'll see, the fundamental problem, which people did not mention, is the fact that embryonic stem cells already come from another human being. That is, they already, however embryonic they are already have a complete genetic makeup and therefore will be recognized by the body of any host into which they are injected as foreign, as coming from another human being, and therefore will be subject to the same immune mechanisms that cause organ rejection. So the problem with embryonic stem cells was clear from the beginning but simply not talked about, and many, many lies were told publicly in order to get funding for this research, which has produced zero cures. And that's what's particularly emphasized here in question number two. How many successful treatments for incurable diseases have been developed using stem cells harvested from human embryos? Again, pointing out that these embryos were destroyed. And the answer is zero, none. There are two clinical trials that were attempted. One has been discontinued because of the fact that it showed no benefit whatever, and the other is continuing at this time. However, adult stem cell research, which is to say effectively tissue culture, taking cells from a person's body and doing various things to them that allow them to become more primitive, capable of becoming other kinds of tissue, which the Church has always approved of and strongly recommends and even encouraged at the level of the Vatican in a conference some time back. How many successful treatments for incurable diseases have been developed from stem cells from adult tissues, causing no harm to the donor? And there is a link and also a footnote that lists the 73 conditions that have shown patient benefit. So adult stem cell research, which is not morally problematic and is supported and even strongly encouraged by the church, has resulted in a whole host of cures, whereas this strongly touted embryonic stem cell research has yielded no results whatever. So part of the result of the intention of this quiz is to highlight the untruths that were told and to raise people's consciousness in regard to this form of a so-called therapy. In number four, the question has to do with poverty and the tragic fact that that over 16 million U.S. children live in houses, live in families and contexts where at some point during the year the question of their ability to get food is uncertain, will be uncertain. There are questions in number five about the poverty rate, in number six about unemployment, and here again something of relevance to our own study. The question whether Americans believe that health professionals should not be forced to participate in procedures to which they have moral objections. And the answer is the overwhelming majority of Americans believe that health professionals should not be forced to participate in procedures that they have moral reservations or strongly held moral convictions against. So the government's gradual and creeping tendency to try to force healthcare professionals to engage in practices which many of them regard as wrong, such as prescribing medications that would cause abortions, or even participating in abortions or in activities that support abortions, is something that the majority of the public rejects, but which quietly the government and various health agencies are attempting to enforce. So that's a consciousness-raising kind of question. And number eight raises the question of what role Catholic hospitals play in healthcare in the United States. And the answer is that one in six patients receive care in Catholic healthcare institutions. This is reminding us of how very important Catholic healthcare is and how very dangerous it would be or will be if the government attempts to force Catholic institutions to provide services that violate Catholic Church teaching. Number nine raises the question, which is seldom commented on by people who are interested in or attempting to promote abortion, and that is that in 2011, the question was raised, well, how many OBGYNs actually do perform abortions? That is, of the doctors who are theoretically trained and capable of performing this, how many do it? And the answer is only 14%. And what this study didn't show, and what I'm aware of from my own experience, is that in general what one finds is that the number of recent graduates from training is often higher, considerably higher than this, and it decreases over the years as those physicians, those surgeons, begin to experience for themselves the real horror that is involved in causing the death of a child, which in some cases might even be able to be saved if life-saving techniques were used. So the thing that is often not raised is the fact that those who are supposed to perform abortions, of those who could, the majority do not and do not want to. In number 10, an issue not specifically related to bioethics, but one that is slightly tangentially raised, the question of the definition of the family, of course, focusing particularly on the issue of the attempt on the part of the government, and particularly on the part of state governments, to define marriage in ways that would allow for same-sex couples. The church wants to point out, as in number 10, that intact married families, if a person is raised in an intact married family, they're less likely to be physically or sexually abused, less likely to use drugs or alcohol, to become pregnant or to cause pregnancy as a teenager. All of these things are less likely if a person is raised in an intact married family. And related to this, what factors best predict that a boy would exhibit good behavior in fifth grade and avoid being suspended in eighth grade? And again, here, being raised in an intact home with both father and mother. So having both parents, having parents of different genders, is an important social, psychological, and spiritual developmental factor, which is something that is unfortunately denied by many of the individuals today who are promoting same-sex marriage. We're going to move now rather rapidly through several questions. Number 12, pointing out the tragedy that children in single-parent homes represent a significant number, a significant percentage of the population, that is 27%, but in the context of poverty, that percentage is much higher. So unfortunately, in the context of poverty, this very situation that will promote all the negative factors that were described in numbers 10 and 11 are going to be higher. There are questions aimed at raising people's consciousness in regard to migrants and immigration in numbers 13 and 14 that I'd invite you to look at, as well as in number 15. And then in number 16, what one could describe as evidence of the development of Catholic doctrine. The statement, torture is intrinsically evil, and this document by the North American bishops states that's true. The torture is an intrinsic moral evil. And if you'd like to see the documents that support this, although those documents do not state this as explicitly as this document does, nonetheless, it is clear that the Church considers that there is no moral justification for torture, that torture should always be opposed, and this is torture whether it is used as punishment or in order to extract information, that there is no justification for it, and that one is always to work for its end. Here, this is not specifically a point of our bioethics discussion, although the involvement of healthcare professionals in contexts where torture is being used and prisoners are intended to be kept alive while information is extracted from them represents a very grave and serious moral issue for those healthcare professionals, since the Church has clearly declared that there are no circumstances, and that is clear, no circumstances under which torture can be justified, even if the desire is to try to extract information that might be beneficial or necessary for the well-being or even lives of other people. Here again, we are faced with the problem of engaging in an act which is degrading, destructive, and deliberately causing pain, and to attempt to regard it as justifiable because of the end that would be achieved is opposed to the principles that we've already studied. You cannot justify an evil action, an action which itself, of its own nature, causes harm and degradation, both for the person who's being tortured, and as the Church has wisely pointed out, if you look at the sources quoted in the footnotes, those who engage in it are even more degraded than the person being harmed. This cannot be justified. And so the bishops are quite right in declaring, although again, you don't find this stated in other church teaching documents, that torture is intrinsically evil. And this would be a reminder of the fact that it's not only issues connected with bioethics, that is the beginning of life, that involve intrinsic evil, issues connected with sexuality, with procreation, and with causing the death of the innocent. It also is connected with deliberately inducing pain in the innocent. Number 17 has to do with the terrible tragedy of landmines and the fact that the overwhelming majority of people who are killed and injured by these are not military combatants, but non-military civilians. Numbers 18 and 19 are concerned respectively with the budget in the U.S. in regard to fighting poverty and disease. And then number 19, a description of the effects of climate change. It might be noted that the Church is very careful here not to make statements about climate change as anthropogenic, that is to say, claiming that all of these changes are the direct result of human activity, attempting to ascribe some sort of cause and therefore to claim a quick and easy solution to any of them, but to say that the fact of climate change is itself a terrible burden, especially for the poor throughout the world. And then finally, number 20, this is important, the question of people with disabilities, highlighting the fact that individuals who are disabled do in fact find it extremely difficult to obtain the resources they need in order to live in dignity, and the number of disabled persons living in poverty is frighteningly high. This question of disability is important for us in the context of bioethics, as we'll see, because sometimes the category of an individual being disabled is used in the area of eugenics as an excuse for not allowing that person to come into existence, to be born, or encouraging their life to be ended quickly by means of euthanasia, which the Church has absolutely and consistently rejected. So again, this quiz is what one might regard as a kind of a popular consciousness-raising tool on the part of the bishops, and from our perspective, it's interesting to note how very significantly issues of bioethics play a role in this document, and how simply making people aware of the document could highlight some of the crucial questions that we will be looking at together during this course.